spirit and the soul, and that we don't often know the difference between spirit and soul. So I thought it would be helpful to have a picture here while I talk, because I'm only talking a bit about that myself. But that we are three-parted. This is like the three heavens in us. Body, soul, and spirit. The soul is your mind, your will, and your emotions and desires. It's four-parted. And it's female, psuche. Spirit is male. And this is neutral. It can be male or female. It can go either way. So this is, we have inner flesh and we have outer flesh. Okay? So that's what the body is. That's it, that inner flesh or outer flesh. Understand that difference. But we can connect, this can connect with spirit and this can connect with soul. But we are three-parted, not just spirit and soul. We are also body. I had talked before when I said in the beginning there was only one. There was only one entity. We know that Genesis 1 is actually the creation chapter, where God went through and he created everything. And he created man, one, in his own image. And in the image of him, in the image of him, God, male and female, he created them, male and female. And then he told him, them, male and female, be fruitful and multiply and take dominion over everything that was upon the earth. At that time, there was no other matter. There were just beings. There were animals, flying things. So to take, in essence, to take dominion over all of that, every living thing that had life, to take dominion over that, to subdue it, to take authority over it, putting all things under their feet. This was his command or suggestion or whatever, to be fruitful, to begin to be fruitful, to begin to multiply. Then you have to take dominion over all. And then Genesis 2 takes us to formed man, where God breathed upon that formed man that he took of the dust of the earth, remember? It was earthy. And it became, that which was earth, became living soul. And man was formed according to the creation blueprint of Genesis 1. As male and female. Okay? At that moment that he formed him of the dust of the earth, he was already male and female. He was man, but he's male and female. But his female was as yet unseen, unrealized, unfruitful, and barren. Remember, yes. He told them to be fruitful. If you're going to multiply, you cannot be barren. Need to be fruitful. So at that point, recognizing that he needed a helpmeet to do that, he caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man. And then in so doing, there became a change in order here. Okay. For out of the man's rib, he formed that man to become the man with a womb. So this was a change in order from what he had already been. Okay. Now she within man is capable of producing fruit, of producing seed. You cannot be fruitful and multiply unless you have a womb. So man must have a womb to do so. And this actually is preparation for the man-child down the road. That man-child that's spoken of throughout Scripture, but most particularly in Revelation, the man-child. So ribs actually form a cage over the heart and lungs to protect them. And so they arch over, or they roof over, or they crown over, they're curved, over two of the most important organs in our chest cavity.
Yes.
And literally, ribs are of the body. So we see the woman was taken out of the side of man, where they had been like conjoined twins, male and female. We heard of recently of conjoined twins that were separated. They were joined at the side. Okay, so she and he were literally bone of bone, flesh of flesh.
Yes.
Okay. And that significance of the use of the word rib is not missed here, because bones can repair themselves, but ribs actually regenerate. You can take ribs and use them as bone grafts for other parts of the body. So there's a regeneration. He didn't lose anything in so doing, like some people think. We have 12 pairs of ribs, so does that mean man was born with only 11? No, that's not so. Rib can regenerate, okay? And that's important to understand here, and that he did not lose anything in this process. So when God brought now remember here too, God brought the woman to man. Okay. And Adam then knew what his relationship would be with this woman. And it is not God that said, therefore shall a man leave his mother and father and cleave unto his wife, and then they shall be flesh. God did not say that. If you look at it carefully, you'll see that Adam said that. Adam knew what that his relationship was then. He understood it. As soon as God brought him that woman, he understood that she had come out of him, and now she was visible to him, could be visible to him. This is making this woman visible to us, to the spirit, man, okay? So this makes them actually dependent upon each other. Now, in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 is such an important chapter. It's a beautiful chapter, one in which we could read it over and over and over again, because it really explains this relationship so well. When Paul begins talking here in 1 Corinthians 15, actually this whole chapter is about defending resurrection, and he explains resurrection here in this chapter. And he says, he begins the chapter by saying that he was buried and then rose again on the third day. And he begins by saying, talking about the different ones that witnessed to his actual physical being on this earth, his flesh upon walking upon this earth. He was seen of Cephas, he was seen of Peter, he was seen of the 12, he was seen of about 500 brethren at once. And the greater part of those remain unto this day. So Paul actually ministered a lot with Luke. Now Paul never actually met Jesus physically. He had the experience, on the road to Damascus. He had that vision, but he never actually met him face to face. Luke didn't either. But these that never met him had the opportunity to go and talk with those who actually were there. Okay, they talked to Mary, they talked to all the apostles, they talked to the disciples. Here they talked. He said most of these are here today. 500. Most of these are here today when he wrote this. This sounds like present tense here to me. Most remain, whom the greater part remain unto this present. He's talking about now. Some are fallen asleep. And then he was seen of James, and then of all the apostles, and last of all he was seen by me, meaning when I had that vision of him. He was seen. So he talks first, he brings out that, this was a true witness of actual people seeing him and then talking about it amongst themselves, what they had seen. And so they shared that information with each other. And so to talk about this resurrection, those that had actually seen it, the resurrection, but there were those there that didn't believe in the resurrection. They didn't believe that this happened. And of course, the Sadducees didn't believe in the resurrection. So, and we know that there were a lot of Pharisees and Sadducees and scribes and so on who also became Christian, who followed them. So there were Sadducees mixed in amongst their group who still held that same feeling. No, there couldn't. I don't believe in a resurrection. This couldn't have happened. So he said he is in essence has to defend it, that if there were no resurrection, then our faith is in vain. Our preaching is in vain.
Absolutely.
Because our whole ministry stands on that resurrection, yes. Of which, he has taken upon all of the sins of mankind. That's the essence of the resurrection. So this goes a huge step forward from anything that they had ever been taught before. And it's really important for them to stand there and say that your faith is as such that we need to be taught about this resurrection and what that means for us. And then we are not found to be false witnesses, he says here. So he talks in here about the natural body and the spiritual body. And he says in here in verse 44, it is sown a natural body, it is raised a spiritual body, there is a natural body and there is a spiritual body. Okay? And he gives a body as it pleases him, and to every seed his own body. So we see here in the first Adam, there's a natural body because this is he was created out of the dust of the earth. So this is the natural body, bone of bone, flesh of flesh. And the man was to cleave unto his wife and have one flesh. And that's the sowing of the natural body. The first Adam is entirely about the sowing of the natural body. And then in verse 45, and so it is written, the first man, Adam, was made a living soul. The last Adam was made a quickening spirit, coming up to that place in us. But Paul says in verse 36, thou fool, that which thou sowest is not quickened unless it first die.
Amen. That's what I'm telling you.
And then he said in the following verse, that which you sow is not that body which shall be, but only bare grain. It may be of wheat or whatever, but it's only bare grain. Well, we know that. So he starts talking about the sowing of the seed. Now, we know that's not literal, but he has to explain this. He has to show us by what is natural, just like he told Nicodemus when he told him that he would need to be born again. And he says, well, how, what is that? I don't understand what that is about. And he said, well, the wind bloweth where it listeth and makes a sound thereof. Okay, it makes a sound. This is how we know that it's blowing, because it makes a sound that we can hear.
Yes.
Okay, and it comes and it goes, but we don't know where it's coming or where it's going. We don't know. We know there's a sound. We can hear the sound. And that's how the Spirit is. We hear the sound, not an actual literal sound. We can hear that sound within us. We can hear that sound around us. We hear that sound, and we don't know where it comes and goes, but that is how it is to be born again.
Yes.
And Nicodemus said, well, how can this be? He said, well, if I tell you earthy things, how can you understand? You won't believe when I tell you earthly things. Well, then how can I tell you heavenly things and you won't believe that? So this is what I'm trying to bring out, is the earthy thing, that first man, Adam, which was of the dust of the earth, which was living soul. But he's bringing us to that place where we are quickening spirit, okay? Because we recognize there's a resurrection, shall we say.
Adam actually chose,
out of that being born again.
Adam chose the soul life when God breathed in his nostrils.
Yes.
He chose the soul life right there. Of course, he was made to choose. I believe.
Well, right. He didn't have any choice, actually. Where else was there to go if you were... if you know nothing at all, what, there wasn't any choice. No. You know, if you're only given one choice. But so, I mean, literally, once quickened, we start off truly naked in spirit. We're a spiritual newborn. And we lose all of our natural identity. We die to it. We leave it all. That we may later be covered with that which what we shall be, which we cannot yet see because it's not yet visible to us. He has taken that woman out of that man to make her visible, but yet she is not yet visible really to us.
Amen.
Okay, until we understand that difference between soul and spirit, and all that Connie said about relating to that which is intellect or logical. Yes, there's a place for intellect. There's a place for logic. That's your left-sided brain. But there's also a place for the right side, that intuitive, spiritual, deep calling onto deep on the right side of our brain. It comes into balance. The two work together to come into balance. And yes, you will be using your intellect, but it won't be your ego intellect, okay? It will be a wisdom. It will be a wisdom that's beyond all wisdom. And you will know it, because that sound of the Spirit is speaking to you. You will hear His Spirit in that. Others will hear His Spirit in that. That makes a distinct sound.
Yes.
It's not an uncertain sound. It's certain within us. So, but whatever we're sowing cannot be made alive until there is first of all a death. First the natural, then the spiritual. This is why he kept talking about the sowing of the seed. You know what happens to a seed? That hard shell has to fall away first so that that seed can penetrate. Okay, it breaks apart. The seed pushes upon the hard shell and breaks apart that hardened shell. That's what's happening within us.
Yes.
The seed within us is penetrating these outward layers, not this outward flesh, but this inward flesh.
Yes.
It's penetrating. When we came in here this morning, I talked about this pressing on, and you were talking about it some, Lester, pressing on, pushing against all these things that are coming against us. That is that seed pushing against that outer shell, that and it falls apart and it dies. There's a death there. There's a death to all of that as that quickening spirit rises within us. Okay, that dies. All that hard outer shell dies. It's like that hardened heart. You can press, you can press, you can imprint. His laws are imprinted on a softened heart. Okay, it penetrates that softened heart, not a heart that is hard. But I wanted to really, this is the labor. This is the labor that to bring forth that seed, and her desire is towards her husband, he said then, and he would rule over her. This was the first time that this was said about the ruling over. He didn't mention that in before that, okay? This was talking about after the fall, when she hearkened on to the voice of the serpent. Then when she hearkened on to that voice, rather than to God's spirit voice sounding in her ear, when she hearkened on that, because she had to try it out, she heard it, right? that was an opportunity that I've never heard before. Okay, I got to try this out, see what this is all about. So at that point, after the fall, then it became another new order where he was then to rule over her. Her desire, her heart was to be towards her husband then. Okay, and then the two would be one flesh. But before the fall, Adam understood that the man would cleave to his wife, not rule over. Okay, and to cleave is a really interesting word to study out. It's to abide fast, to be joined together, to have an effect on, to impact each other. And I found it interesting that rivers and streams will cleave their way through the sides of mountains or rocky barriers, and they will form valleys. So to cleave also means to split or separate something, especially along a natural line of separation or using a sharp tool. It's to divide by the blow of an axe, for instance, or a sword, perhaps. Okay, you cleave it. And anyone who has ever been in a marriage can testify that there is a cleaving process. There's first a splitting along all the natural lines that we brought into our marriage from our genetics and from our experiences. It's just, you know, when you look back that you did that. There was a splitting along of all those natural lines. Whatever natural lines had already been formed in us are going to be uprooted as you begin to understand what it means to cling to your spouse. That all that which you have known, been comfortable with, been familiar with, is absolutely being uprooted in you. I know it happened to me. So it's like the experience of the double-edged sword. Because you've got the splitting, much like the rending of a garment we bring into our marriage, and then a coming together to abide together with no space in between. Bone of bone, truly bone of bone, and flesh of flesh. So if we can get this in the natural, we can understand this in the spirit.
I was just thinking, as you were bringing this out, how many religions have been built on woman, six paces behind me, submit, or that little misconception right there. Woman was held in subjection for thousands of years and still is so many places. And some women ought to be, okay? Some ought to be. But I just had to interject that because man took that and has built religion after religion and sect after sect, and we've seen it.
Yeah.
on that little misconception.
Well, in essence, God cleaved woman out of man, and by this, Adam was to leave his former affections. He said, remember he said, leave your father and your mother, and dependencies, and cleave unto his wife. And this would cause them to have interdependence, mutual dependence, codependence upon each other. And in the original Hebrew, it indicates a strong, unbreachable, committed love. And remember, in the beginning, it was not so that man would rule over woman. He was to cleave to that woman and have a mutual interdependence upon each other. So that, because that was breached when woman hearkened unto the serpent rather than her husband, God had to begin a circuitous route, a roundabout journey to take them back to where they started off in the beginning, okay? In essence, he beheaded the woman, really. He took off her identity of that which she had been identifying with when he told her that you now, your husband will rule over you. You have no identity now. I'm taking it off. You're beheaded. You now look to your husband for your identity, which is where we're supposed to be looking anyway. That he, Christ in us, is our identity. He's our covering. Okay? So, I mean, that is the rightful order in that.
Yes.
And her desire would be then towards him, and he would rule over her. But the woman's seed, which we know to be Christ's seed, is the man-child in Revelation 12. The divine feminine, we are told, you remember from your reading, will bruise the head, the identity of the serpent. Okay, that divine feminine will bruise its head, step on its head, because right, it's in the dust.
Yes.
All of this stuff is in the dust, so it's right there easily available. And the woman's, or the serpent's going to nip at the woman's heel.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And something that bites your heel is going to eventually trip you up, isn't it? So spiritually, it's going to affect your walk. So we've had a little bites at our heel.
No,
I did when I came in here this morning.
I had bigger bites.
So we have the the nipping at the heel, okay? So, but and this is why, and this is a mystery here. Paul said that the head of the woman is the man, which people have taken that and corrupted that into the natural. The head of the woman is the man, but the head of the man is Christ. Okay, it cannot be any other order. Okay, the correct order is the head of the man, or and actually the head of the man is God. Okay,
yes.
So and the head of the, or excuse me, the head of the man is Christ, but the head of Christ is God.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that we have this order here. The woman, her head is the man, and the man's head is Christ, and Christ's head is God.
That's growing up in them.
That's an ascending order, but that all occurs within us as we are reborn. As we have been reborn, as we are resurrected, as that quickening spirit happens within us, that order is established within us, the rightful order.
Total oneness, union.
I'm sorry?
Total oneness, union.
Yes, that's what brings us into
That's what he's wanting to do. Is
this
complete,
is all going
right,
to collapse
complete,
and become one
right,
circle.
Complete one.
Yes.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Yeah, and that's what people need to understand is that the things that were talked about there in Genesis had nothing to do with the natural ever.
Nope.
Yes, that's what I'm trying
ever.
To that's what I'm trying to
ever.
Say. But you can
ever.
But you can
so
to understand it, as he told Nicodemus when he talked about the wind, we have to talk about something that we can actually
visibly see or
visually
whatever,
well, and this is
conceive.
This is where people get into trouble because instead of being spiritually minded, they're religious minded.
Yes.
Well, religion, the word religion means to bind.
Yeah.
So what is it binding you to? It's binding you to whatever somebody else thought up in the past.
Right.
So, anyway, it all boils back down to, like we always say, what you do in your relationship, not necessarily what somebody else does. It's what your relationship is.
But it's all for the same purpose.
And
we become that complete oneness, you know.
And we see these lines, we draw lines, and in the natural we have to see the divisions. This is really the outer court, and this is the holy place, and this is the holiest of all. But there's not going to be any division.
No.
Once we, all of this becomes real to us, there's not going to be any more division or any more lines. We're going to see it all as one complete entity,
well,
one complete picture.
Well, there's not any division or lines. It's just, it's a matter of where our consciousness is.
Yeah, there's only division in our consciousness at the moment where we're at.
And we're so divided. I mean, that's what God did when he started off. He began dividing. But the beginning, it was not so. Everything was one light. It was all light. So he has to divide so that we can see, you know, so we can look at it. If I hold up an apple to you, you don't know what that apple is. Here's an apple. Unless I divide it. And I show you what's inside, and I show you the seeds and stuff that's inside of it. But you have no concept of that apple at all. I can say it's an apple, and it's good to eat, and I can tell you all kinds of things about that apple. But until I cut it apart and show you, you don't have any concept. It's not expressive to you, okay? It's not real to you. So this is how God expresses himself, by dividing himself first. But the rightful divine order in the beginning was not that a man should put away his wife, as in divorce. Remember, that's what Jesus told him. Jesus said that Moses allowed for that because of the hardness of your heart. And that's the only thing that makes marriage irreconcilable is hardness of heart. You can get that, can't you? You can get that once your heart is stoic, saying no. You're not soft and pliable. You can't move. You won't move. There's nothing that can be done there. Nothing.
Well, that's the very thing that religion has done, particularly the Levant religions, you know, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, is the very thing that you were just talking about. It's what they did. What they were not supposed to do, they did. With regard to the soul. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Okay.
And then they want to, instead of actually making it that better, they turn everything natural and put it against the woman. When really what it's saying is, don't divorce the divine feminine that's in you.
Right.
So,
right. Don't make that division. Don't cut there in that division. Don't do that.
Yes.
Okay? Because you're cutting it away by hardening your heart. And a hearing heart is just exactly the opposite of a hardened heart. We are brought to a place of obedience through a hearing heart. We can't live in a world of mystical unity, you know. Our unity, our oneness has to be real. In a body that's fitly joined together. This body's fitly joined together when it's operating as one in its correct order. That's a body that's fitly joined together.
Joined together with Christ
completely. And it's a hearing heart is a surrender. It's yielded. It's one that can hear and it's subject, and it understands the interdependence of the woman and the man, of the woman to the man, not only the woman to the man, but the man to the woman. That's two things going on here. It's not just the woman to the man. She is hearing him, and he is hearing her. They're operating as one because of that.
It's like arrows.
They make each other number one.
Flowing. Yes.
No matter what.
Because when you surrender and when you begin to do that at first, it may be that you have to do that at the beginning of a relationship where you set it apart like that. You have to set it apart like that. But after a while, you walk so in tune with each other, you know what the other one is thinking, or you can guess what might be coming out of their mouth, or what they might do, or how they might approach something. You know them so well. But it's not just in me, my divine feminine. I become divine feminine. When I hook up to spirit, I become that. But it's not just me hearing him, because he is speaking always, and he is hearing me. Yes. We are hearing each other. I hear him, and he hears me. It's equal here.
But that's born out of a relationship.
Yes.
Only.
As we attune to that yielding and that surrender to each other, it's not just the woman surrendering. He is also surrendering, because what? His head is Christ. So, you know, they each have their ear to the door of each other's heart, really. And the sacrifice was always made at the door of the tabernacle. So their ears totally becomes to a place where they're so totally in tune, like a beautiful musical score. And he said, he who has an ear to hear, let him hear what the Spirit has to say. And then our ear will not hearken to the subtle serpent's voice. Our ear will not be deceived. She talked a lot about being deceived. We cannot be deceived then, because if we're always tuned to the male, the Spirit, who is attuned to Christ, who is attuned to God, okay? All that, we're attuned to each other. We're tuned to these within us. We hear him, he hears us. We're so in tune with each other. We cannot be deceived then. That's where we're trying to get us to back to the beginning, where we're not hearkening to that voice anymore. And he cleaves to his wife, and that's his very life. She cleaves to them, indeed they are one. And it brings in the body, its own house, under subjection. It brings that under subjection, down here where it belongs. It brings that house under subjection. This is the threefold cord, too. It cannot be broken. So nothing can come between them. Indeed, they become one. And then in this, we also see the difference between the first Adam, living soul that was formed, and his life was within the seed only. It was therefore self-sustaining, self-contained. Can we see that in this formed living soul? It was self-sustaining, self-contained, only there within that form. But in the last Adam, the quickening spirit, this is life-giving. Okay, so what happens? The life comes out of the seed. It bursts forth out of the seed then. It's not self-contained, self-sustaining. It bursts out of the seed to sustain whatever is needed out there. Every seed has its own body and therefore its own glory. There's a glory of a terrestrial, and there's a glory of a celestial. Okay? Every seed has its own glory, and in that you bring forth, you sustain, you give life. You don't just hold that life within you, you can pour it out. So that's all I've got to say.